from education to employment and everything in between.
It's a clearinghouse for all things shale.
This is the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, and Matt Henderson.
Good morning and welcome to the Shale Gas News. I'm Bill DeRozier, calling in via Skype because I'm still practicing social distancing for the Shale Gas News here. But joining me on air, as always, Rusty Fender, Matt Henderson.
Good morning and thank you, Bill. Of course, I'm chaperoning still D.C. Taylor in the studio this week, so we're keeping our six feet.
Thanks for being here.
Absolutely. I'm glad to be here.
Keeping watch over
management
me.
Wanted me to look over you. I shouldn't have shared that with you, but I'm keeping my good eye on you. And Matt Henderson, of course, joins us via Skype from the Williamsport Bureau. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning, guys. Doing well here. As you said, we're moving to green. We're still abiding by social distancing and wearing our masks and hopefully moving to something, a little bit more normal here shortly.
Boy, hopefully it's been a long summer, and the summer just started a little while ago, so things hopefully will be looking brighter. Back to you, Bill.
I was going to say there, Rusty, it feels like summer started, but I'll tell you what, the weather we've been having the last couple of weeks, I wouldn't trade this for anything. It almost feels like the Twilight Zone if you think about it, because Pennsylvania is notoriously bad for summer weather, right? Either like a lot of rain or a lot of drought, but it's been an enjoyable few couple of weeks here, especially since we've been quarantined. My wife and I have taken up landscaping and gardening and lawn care and stuff like that outside, and it's been a pleasurable experience. I've really started to take pride in the front yard.
Yeah, and you're right, Bill. I mean, we had snow in the middle of May and frost and freeze warnings up until a couple of weeks ago. So boy, it was an amazing transformation to some incredible picture postcard weather, as they say, after a couple of really rocky months. And we wanted to, ask you about your first Father's Day this year. We have to recognize your first Father's Day being a father. Bill, how did everything go?
Well, thank you very much for recognizing it. It went very well. I taught my 4.5-month-year-old daughter how to smoke up a brisket on the big green egg. So I'm starting her off right. So
starting
I expect
early.
That level of Father's Day treatment every year now going forward.
That's great. She'll be picking up a pickup truck in your honor in just a couple of years, Phil. Weightlifting.
I look forward to those days, but... Well, thank you for tuning in today. This is the Shale Gas News, a show dedicated to helping you understand why energy matters in our lives. And I'm reminded of last week's show where a friend of ours, Matt Austin of Holcomb Energy Eastern Freight, joined us for a couple of minutes to discuss his recent decision to install, of all things, an electric vehicle charger at one of his commercial properties. But his reasoning for doing it is probably different than most people that install these. His reasoning simply was, the electricity, the energy that comes into this charging unit comes from natural gas when you look at how many electric generation stations there are in Northeast Pennsylvania. And again, we laugh on the show, Rusty and Matt, about like the numerous ways we can point out why natural gas especially helps generate that energy that we enjoy every day. But there's a brand new example, one that I never even thought to bring up on the show, and I want to remind the listeners here, is that when you plug in your electric vehicle, there's a good chance that gas is coming from natural gas or that electricity is coming from natural gas or some sort of other fossil fuel. And just remember that it's there. It's accessible, it's abundant, and it's affordable because of the work that this industry and others like it are doing. So don't forget that, and hopefully as we enjoy this summer, months, we can all remember that a little bit, that the hardworking men and women of the energy industry are providing us that luxury, that comfort. We have a couple of stories here, national stories. Trump administration asks Supreme Court to review Keystone Pipeline ruling. Center Square reports that the Trump administration has asked the U.S. Supreme Court to overturn a federal judge's decision and grant a permit to allow the construction of the Keystone XL pipeline to continue. The 1,200-mile pipeline from Alberta, Canada, to Nebraska has been stalled for much of the last decade. As I'm reading this, I was just chuckling. I can still remember when Obama and John Kerry and all these people were involved with this thing under the previous administration years ago. And it's this one pipeline that's received so much bad publicity and so much fight. There have literally been projects proposed and built through the United States over the last decade. And this one still isn't completely done. It's dumbfounding. I can't say it any other way. And it's all because it crosses the border to Canada that this has really gotten out of hand. Again, folks, we live in a modern energy world where we have the Department here in Pennsylvania of Environmental Protection. We have the U.S. government's environmental regulators. The industry is spearheading new technologies, new innovations, new efficiencies. Why would we stand in the way of these projects, right? Especially, Rusty, I mean, you were around for some of this. 100 years ago, they were putting cast iron pipe in the ground. And in most cases, that cast iron pipe is still in the ground. It's still working fine. So why wouldn't we want to install modern equipment in a modern world? I'm going to throw it up to the group.
Absolutely. You're right. Thanks. I think I've been insulted there, Bill, but you're right. 100 years ago, those cast iron pipes are still in service. As a matter of fact, one of the streets in Old Forge, they took out not too long ago, they took out wooden pipes with, you know, the staves that are bound together. You know, when water hits the inside of a wooden pipe with its different staves and staffs inside, it proves to be a very thorough leak proof vessel, a transporting vessel for water. So wooden pipes were still in place in the 1950s in New York City. So you're right, Matt.
Yeah, you're right. I think, Bill, of course, you're using common sense, which we know sometimes people don't have. But, jumping back a little too, you mentioned about, you know, using natural gas for electricity and so forth. People sometimes don't know where it comes. I was chuckling when you're saying that because, again, you know, we've all talked to the high school students or, you know, there's different groups who you know, you ask where they plug their iPhone and electricity comes from and, you know, they point to the wall out there. But, I think just as this show is and as a lot of us do in our other lives is, you know, education and getting, you know, people to know, you know, where things are at. And to your point about, you know, putting in the latest and the greatest technology, it's better. You know, we don't use wood anymore. Obviously, that was well before our time, Bill and I at least. And, moving to, you know, the modern pipes and so forth. But, like I said, sometimes we try to use logic and, sometimes the other people out there just don't use logic when logic should be.
Oh, it's frustrating. But again, hopefully this one gets resolved and the industry can get back to new innovative projects to continue building out this country to meet the demands and needs of its people and its economy. So a couple other stories here that caught my eyes. When will U.S. shale rebound to pre-pandemic levels? Oil price reports the rebalancing of the oil market has been possible in part due to sharp cutbacks in the U.S. shale production. But what happens next for the industry? The latest data from EIA estimates that production plunges by a colossal 600,000 barrels per day in the week ending June 12th, a massive decline that puts output down more than 2.6 million barrels per day. So, again, we talk about this all the time, how much of a struggle it is to get supply to pull back so that demand can rise prices again. But I think it's happening. Right, wrong, or indifferent, making lemons out of lemonade out of lemons in such a situation. The pandemic probably will be looked back as a reset button for the industry. And I think the industry is going to come out of this over the next 5 to 10 years better because it's allowed it to make the changes that it needs to make. So I will be curious to see how that all builds out. This story, according to E&E News, FERC to host Carbon Pricing Forum. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission announced plans yesterday to hold a technical conference this fall on carbon pricing in the energy markets. The conference was requested by a diverse group of trade associations, power producers, and other stakeholders that emphasize they are not asking FERC to issue a rulemaking, but rather to facilitate a high-level conversation and information sharing session. And this has a lot to do with states implementing carbon capture pricing, or here in Pennsylvania, we call it REGI, the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, which is a cartel, I'd argue, of states in New England that all agree to this framework in an effort to reduce greenhouse emissions. They basically start taxing carbon emitters. The issue with it, beyond just giving up our sovereignty, and we've talked about it on the show, and we'll continue to talk about it on the show, our sovereignty of energy markets being able to make decisions that are best for Pennsylvania, is the fact that Pennsylvania is a net exporter of electricity. We are interconnected into the PJM grid that monitors our grid. It's a complicated system, but basically it allows for us to know there's electricity when we need it. And more importantly, we don't have rolling brownouts, blackouts, or price spikes that make using this electricity so unbearable. The reality is we're not really interconnected with these states here in PA that are in the REGI program. So it's another hurdle. And I think what other states are starting to say is we need to talk this out more, because if one state implements it, another doesn't, how does that affect pricing? What if you get your power from one state that has carbon pricing, but it goes to another state that doesn't? Well, that's going to cause that electricity to go up. So we could go through endless scenarios, but I think it's good to see FERC taking a step forward and getting some conversation about this, because I guarantee you there are states that think it's a good idea and there are states that think it's a bad idea. And the biggest thing we have to keep in mind is the consumers. You listening to this show, this podcast, talking about this with your friends over at the water cooler is what needs to happen, because, again, oftentimes the best ideas to try and control greenhouse emissions may not result in greenhouse emission controls, but will result in less money in your pocket. Matt, I know this is an issue you have been covering for a little bit there too. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with you. And you know, we're talking about that, a couple of callers recently, just, specifically on REGI, and, you know, we see, you know, some policy, this policy moving forward without the support or the recommendation of some of the, you know, checks and balances in place, you know, some of the committees out there looking at it. And, you know, Pennsylvania is a little bit different than some of the other states that we're following up at, or that we're, you know, looking to join, or that they want us to join in there. And, you know, it's just interesting time, you know, we're living in. As you mentioned in your one article, you know, this would probably be viewed as a reset for the industry in terms of the pandemic when we eventually look back and hopefully it's completely gone. But policy drives everything, doesn't it? And it's, as we're getting into a presidential election cycle, and, you know, it's only going to get louder and more, using air quotes or facts out there from both sides as we move forward. So, yeah, it's interesting times we live in, Bill. And as we mentioned here, you know, Father's Day last weekend, bringing in your daughter here. And as we know, you know, what are they going to have? What are they going to see when we're old and they're running the world wars out there?
That's a good point there. And I remember Dan Markheim, who comes on the program regularly, he writes for Forbes. One of his recent pieces is, you know, what decisions are we making today that are going to impact our next generation, our children's generation? And these are serious thoughts. But another serious thought, something that I think people look forward to every week, Fender's Fast Facts. Rusty, what do you have for us?
Hey, good morning, and thank you very much, Bill, for this. I don't think there's very few people alive that aren't familiar with the television show The Honeymooners with Jackie Gleason. Well, 32 years ago this weekend, in June 29th, 1988, the statue of Jackie Gleason rededicated the Port Authority bus terminal in New York City as the ultimate bus driver from The Honeymooners. And some
mere bag of shells, Norton.
Hey, give me a little profile here, Ralphie, baby.
So I don't think there's very few people that aren't familiar with this. In the beginning, with The Honeymooners, there was a different Alice. For the first 5 years, it was Pert Kelton. She was on board as Alice, but her husband was brandished a communist. So she was removed from the series by CBS. Pert Kelton. Jackie Gleason originally rejected Audrey Meadows for his wife for being too young and too pretty. When Audrey Meadows arrived to audition for the role of Alice, she was the first rejected in 10 seconds, reportedly stating she was too young and too pretty. So she went home, removed her makeup, changed her hairstyle, and donned a plain $2 house dress. She hired a photographer to take some de-glamorized shots of her and messaged them to Gleason. Gleason declared, "That's Alice," and rehired her the very same day. Isn't that amazing? One of the show's stars earned a lifetime of residuals from the series, Audrey Meadows, once again, Alice. She had, and this, here's the key, she had two brothers. Both of them were New York City attorneys. When it came time for her to sign her Honeymooners contract, they accompanied her to the bargaining table and insisted that a clause be inserted regarding payment for royalties for any episodes that were ever to be rebroadcast. The network clearly agreed, never imagining that the show would still be running 60 years later. So for 50 years, she received royalties, the only member of the staff who received royalties. Art Carney's dad was the inspiration for many of Ed Norton's mannerisms. His father, was OCD. So Carney said he was just imitating his father, who couldn't even perform the simplest tasks like signing his son's report card without going through a litany of routines like adjusting the desk lamp, aligning the paper, moving items, flexing his arms, double-checking his pen. Wow. So it encouraged Gleason to actually exaggerate his OCD manners. That's pretty interesting. There were no dress rehearsals. Gleason did not believe in dress rehearsals for Dumont, the Dumont Television Network. He wanted his performance to be fresh and spontaneous, and also because he wanted to drink beer at Toots Shore's famous Manhattan watering hole every day. So he did one run through the day before with a minimal amount of crew on hand, like a cameraman and a stagehand, and he wanted to try his jokes. If they laughed, the jokes stayed in. Pretty amazing, isn't it?
All right.
And this is the clincher. Gleason called it quits after just one season. The original 39 episodes were never number one. They were the only ones filmed. He said he has done every possible scenario in the 39 episodes and wanted to go out almost on top in 1956. That's what still runs today. But he was always the number two show, being beaten by one show back in the 1950s. Would you have any idea DC is going to be the best possible guest list here? Guest, Bill, any idea on what show? Which is another classic 1950s iconic television show?
I don't know. I'm going to throw out Bonanza.
That's a good guess. Bonanza, however, didn't come on the air till 1959, but that's a good guess. Matt?
What about Hee Haw?
That came on in 69. That's okay. DC?
Ooh, okay.
Leave It to Beaver.
Oh, wow. I thought you would go with the obvious one. I Love Lucy. The number one show of all time. Yeah. This is interesting. By the fall of 1956, two episodes away from ending The Honeymooners, NBC, the other network, moved the incredibly astronomically popular Perry Como show to coincide with The Honeymooners at 8 o'clock Eastern on a Saturday night. And that was the end of The Honeymooners after 39 episodes. By the way, Gleason said, quote, that Art Carney was 99.9% responsible for the success of The Honeymooners.
Oh,
boy,
wow.
I definitely agree with that. 32 years ago, Port Authority Bus Terminal rededicated with Jackie Gleason's statue in front. And those are the fast facts this week. Bill?
Thank you guys very much there, Rusty. And let's take a quick break here on the Shale Gas News. When we return, we'll have more after a word from our sponsors on the Shale Gas News. Stay tuned.
How's business? This question from Brand Graphic Solutions, where they help grow your business with high-impact creative solutions. Brand Graphic Solutions, or BGS, can help your business get noticed. BGS provides equipment decals, job site signage, directional signage, even CNG decals. They service local, regional, and national brands. BGS also does vehicle wraps, which are really cool and eye-catching, by the way. Or call or visit online at brandgraphicsolutions.com. You want to succeed in business? Don't blend in. Stand out. You can thank me later.
Cabot Oil and Gas partners with the Weinberg Food Bank to battle food insecurity in Northeast PA.
It's the partnership of foundations and companies like Cabot that really enable us to be successful.
Gene Brady, president of the Weinberg Food Bank.
We are very blessed. Those regions that have the presence of the gas industry in this area really enables us with things like Pill Glass with Hope, Hunter Share the Harvest, other donations that traditionally have been made to help food banks in their mission to end hunger in Pennsylvania.
Welcome back to the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, Matt Henderson, and me, DC Taylor. Let's go now to a recent webinar. It's a Think About Energy. Gene Barr, president of the PA Chamber of Business and Industry, joined a Think About Energy webinar a few weeks ago to discuss how Pennsylvania businesses can reopen and grow post-COVID-19.
Thanks again for the opportunity. I really enjoy this. Good to be on with two of my favorite state senators. It's good to see both of you. You know, I love the interplay between Senator Yaw and Senator Ujicek because they perfectly tied the importance of upstream to downstream, which we don't do enough. And I think you guys did it extremely well. In my time, my 20 years in the oil industry for BP and API, most of my work was on downstream issues. I worked at, you know, Senator Ujicek, you mentioned the Braskem plant in Marcus Hook. There was a BP refinery there. It's still operating. It's not BP's. But so that was most of what I was familiar with, which I'll talk a little bit about some of these issues. But George mentioned an initiative we're doing called Bring PA Back. And I want to just spend a couple minutes on that. Because reality is, as we entered into this a couple months ago, this critical period of our time that's both a health issue and is now an ongoing economic issue. And obviously some of the health issues related to this economic downturn, we were talking a little bit before, the chief medical officer at UPMC, Dr. Shapiro, said that in his view, because of the economic downturn, we could see as many as 100,000 to 150,000 excess suicides over the desperation that people are seeing. We already know we're seeing more drug overdoses, et cetera. So these bring real issues. And so for the last month and a half, the chamber, along with a number of our local chamber partners, and I know a number on the phone here today, along with a number of statewide organizations, business organizations, including Hospital Association and the Pennsylvania Medical Society, because we want to, as we bring this initiative, PA, back, we want to make sure that we do it in a safe, healthy manner. It's critical for all those who are involved to do that. And it's to focus on those things that we need to do that get Pennsylvania back where we want it, back into some semblance of economic prosperity. And, you know, both of you have noted that in many cases, Pennsylvania trails many others. Senator Udichak, you talked about the fact that your region often trails the Pennsylvania rate, and Pennsylvania's rate typically is worse than the national rate. So we know what we're faced with here, and, you know, we know what challenges we have. So we're focused on trying to get industry and business back safely, figuring out what are the things that we need. One of them we focused on is liability protections, not only for doctors and other healthcare professionals and healthcare facilities, hospitals, but also for businesses, those that have made personal protective equipment, who've turned their manufacturing process around to make that. For essential businesses that were required to operate. And today, interestingly, there was an article in the Post-Gazette, the Giant Eagle supermarket chain out in Pittsburgh is already being sued for requiring people who said that they had a health condition to wear a mask. So we're already starting to see the beginnings of litigation that could hit the natural gas industry as they've had to continue to operate. And we're also trying to give liability protection, not blanket immunity, as some have said, but safe harbor protections to businesses as they start up, so that they can come back and say, if I follow the guidelines, I know I'm going to be given some semblance at least of safe harbor. Those things are absolutely critical in our view. Senator, y'all talked about something that we've all talked about quite a bit, which is infrastructure. And we cannot fully realize the resource that we have here without developing that infrastructure. Look, as we come back, we're going to need all of our resources. Natural gas certainly being one of those resources that's going to be absolutely crucial as we move forward on this. And noted, unfortunately, the short-sightedness of states surrounding us that not only deny themselves the advantages of natural gas, but are actually utilizing energy sources, and in many cases have higher emissions because they're denying the utilization of natural gas to their people. So it hurts us. It certainly hurts them and hurts this country. You know, the issue of Russian natural gas coming in was touched on, and we've talked about it before. And it's absolutely incredible to me that this issue has not gotten the attention that it should. And it's even a little bit broader. There's very good information out there that Russia and other countries have engaged in disinformation against the U.S. and Pennsylvania natural gas industry and energy issues generally. And it's kind of funny. You'll hear people say, well, of course, the Russians involved themselves in the presidential campaign. But why would they ever involve themselves in a huge economic issue that impacts them? It's absolutely incredible. This has gotten nowhere near the attention, the misinformation that can be tied, the funding of certain groups who are trying to completely block natural gas development in this country. Absolutely incredible. And so it certainly deserves much more attention, much more media attention than it has gotten. Senator Udichak, I'm glad to hear you talk about, you know, the project that we're hoping to get up in your area, because it's certainly, while downstream, you two have certainly connected the upstream and downstream sides. What's, again, incredible and goes a little bit back to what I just said about this disinformation campaign, the people, I've seen letters to the editor, op-eds that just, and you put it exactly right. This is a case where we either get zero. It's not a case where we're going to try and get something out of this. It's zero if we don't do this. Some people said, I want 100%. we know what will happen. Those jobs will go elsewhere, just as they were going to go with the Shell facility. Shell was pretty clear. When we put this in, Shell said when they opened, had we not gotten this credit, and as you know, it comes after billions of dollars have been put into the ground. Had we not gotten this credit, the jobs would have gone to West Virginia or Ohio or somewhere else. And for those who have seen that facility, it's absolutely incredible what it's doing for that economy, for the trades in those areas. Absolutely incredible what is happening out there. The same could happen in Northeast PA. But again, to go to this misinformation that's out there, I've seen letters from people claiming hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars in terms of a taxpayer giveaway. That there was actually one letter that said, we should take the fill in the blank because the number changes every day. We should take the $400 million that we're going to give to this industry and use it somewhere else. There is no magic pot of money here. The money comes from, as the two senators know, doing the development in a responsible manner, opening our borders to new jobs that have tremendous benefits across the board. And we do that because we decide to take a little bit less state tax money than we otherwise would. That's what we're talking about here. And again, I think that, you know, we've got to do that. We have to end this wrongheaded thinking that we continue to hear about the industry when people will say, hey, you know what? The natural gas is here. The industry has to be here. They don't. George, as you know, this is a mobile industry. Those rigs can move. I've literally heard people say, well, you know, these are big companies. They can afford to lose money in Pennsylvania. No, they can't. And the analogy I've used with people is if you have a 401k and you have five funds, and four funds make money and one doesn't, you don't say, well, I'm making money in four of my funds. No, you get rid of the dog in your fund and you put it someplace else. Companies make the same decision. If they're not making money in Pennsylvania for whatever reason it is, because they're taxed too high or the permitting issues are there or they can't do it, they will go somewhere else. There are plenty of opportunities for investment, not only in this country, but internationally. And particularly now, coming out of this, we need to make sure that as we are bringing ourselves back, we do not put additional hurdles, barriers to implementing more investment in this Commonwealth. It would be the exact wrongheaded thing to do. We cannot do that, whether it's taxation, whether it's additional regulation, whatever we're talking about, we have to make sure that we don't do it. And let me close with this. At the last, and Senator Udichak mentioned this, and I think that it really bears a discussion. We have so many people out there from Hollywood celebrities on down talking about banning natural gas. We need to end fracking. We need to do this. And Senator Udichak, you know, mentioned the situation at Braskem where a number of people just kept themselves at the facility for, I think, a 30-day period and just worked and stayed and lived at the facility away from their family to make the raw material and make PPEs. Without natural gas and oil, there are no PPEs. It doesn't happen. And our friends at Pioga, and we had talked about this a little bit before, had an interesting pictorial. If you take the typical emergency room in a hospital, there are more than 90 items in that emergency room that are only made possible because of oil and natural gas. Things like EKG leads, IV pumps and power cords, laminated charts, all kinds of medical plastics, thermometers, stethoscope, bandages, parts for syringes, intubation blades, crutches, you name it. This comes about because we have an industry that delivers benefits for the Commonwealth and its citizens, delivers jobs for the Commonwealth and its citizens, and delivers tax revenue for the Commonwealth and its citizens so that we can fund the things that we all know that we want, whether it's education or healthcare or assistance for our seniors. That's what we get when we have a vibrant natural gas industry in Pennsylvania. And that's why it needs to be protected and developed in a responsible manner.
That again, Gene Barr, president of the PA Chamber of Business and Industry, on a recent Think About Energy webinar discussing how Pennsylvania businesses can reopen and grow post-COVID-19. You can follow all these webinars, their YouTube channel. It's called Think About Energy Briefing. You can look them up on YouTube and stay here for more of the shale gas news.
Linde Corporation is a pipeline and infrastructure company, and Linde is proud to work in the Marcellus region, towns and cities, and beyond. Apply at lindeco.com.
And remember, if Lindy wasn't hiring yesterday, chances are we will be hiring tomorrow.
Are you a truck driver looking to earn $1,000 to $2,100 a week with full benefits? Well, Eastern Freight Systems and Tunkhannock are seeking local, regional, and OTR drivers. They even have an oil field division with lanes based in both Tunkhannock and Pittston, PA. They're looking for motivated drivers who are looking to earn good money to join their team. A clean MVR with professional driver training or experience are required. Come join the growing team at Eastern Freight Systems by calling 570-836-8050.
If you're in construction or the gas industry, your team's getting it done 24 hours a day, and so is BX3. When you're working, so is BX3. They're your prime connection to parts, tools, and equipment rentals. If they don't have it at their Montrose or Tunkhannock locations, they'll find it for you, somehow, some way. Trust me, they know people who know people. They're the relentless problem solvers. Call BX3 in Tunkhannock, 836-3000. In Montrose, it's 278-7368. Again, Tunkhannock, 836-3000. Montrose, 278-7368.
We've now been partnering for a couple of years with Cabot to provide what we call Fill a Glass with Hope. In this past year, we served hundreds of kids, and we provided nutritious milk in a quantity of 6,462 half gallons. We're grateful, as are the hundreds of children that are receiving the benefits of the program as a result of what Cabot and its partners do.
For more information, go to wellsaidcabot.com.
The Pennsylvania General Assembly is pushing back against Governor Wolf's executive order to enter Pennsylvania into the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative. PMA's Manufacturing Minute starts now.
And now for the Manufacturing Minute, produced by the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, exclusively for the Shell Gas News.
By a bipartisan vote of 16-8, the House Environmental Resources and Energy Committee voted to advance House Bill 2025 to the full House for consideration. House Bill 2025, the Carbon Dioxide Cap and Trade Authorization Act, sponsored by Representative Jim Struzzi, would authorize the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection to conduct a public comment process on and to submit to the General Assembly a measure or action intended to abate, control, or limit carbon dioxide emissions by imposing a revenue-generating tax or fee on those emissions. As RGGI policies are pushed through the regulatory process, there has been no involvement by the General Assembly. This is troubling because the carbon tax that will be enacted should be constitutionally authored and authorized by the General Assembly and only by the General Assembly. Furthermore, there has been little public input throughout the process, but when there has been public input during those voting meetings of various oversight committees within the Department of Environmental Protection, the proposal has been rejected. Nevertheless, the Wolf administration could still ignore these rejections and implement the executive order anyway. This alone is reason enough to support House Bill 2025. On the constitutionality and impact of the governor's executive order, the sponsor of the bill, Representative Jim Struzzi, spoke to the committee.
This bill is about giving a voice to the people through us, their representatives. And we do not currently have that right now, given that the governor decided unilaterally to move forward with RGGI without first vetting it through the legislature, which he should do. And I should add that this bill is a bipartisan bill, so I think everyone understands that we, as elected representatives of the people, need to make sure that the people have a say in entering any type of multi-state pact, particularly one that could have a detrimental effect on our economy. But as I stated, this bill is more of giving us a voice as elected representatives of the people of Pennsylvania to have a say in what occurs within our Commonwealth, which at present we do not have as it relates to RGGI.
Committee Chairman Daryl Metcalf also spoke in favor of the bill and did not mince words.
As far as a regulatory process to regulate an illegal action of the governor, we should never even get to the regulatory process for something that's being done that's illegal and unconstitutional. We are not going to sit idly by and let him kill these jobs, even though he wants to use a regulatory process, unlike his emergency declaration. So he needs to be stopped on the emergency declaration front that he's utilizing to violate the law in our Constitution and put so many lives in jeopardy. And he needs to be stopped with this bill and other measures. And ultimately, I believe the impeachment measure is the only way to stop him from his illegal, unconstitutional actions. It started in his first 3 months in office, where the Supreme Court knocked him down in 2 out of 3 for violating the Constitution within the first 3 months of his time in office. And he's continued that path. And the legislature has allowed him to get away with it, and we have to put a stop to it because he's just hurting too many people. And we're not about to let him do that again through this action of joining Reggie that he has no authorization to under the Constitution or the law.
Making a plea to her Democratic colleagues to support the vital industries and workers in her district, Representative Pam Snyder had this to say at the hearing.
I would like to talk about this bill, particularly about what this bill is about, and that is about the coal industry and coal-fired power plants and carbon. It's no secret. The largest producing coal mine in North America sits in the 50th district, my district. Cumberland Mine, a union mine, the United Mine Workers of America, sits in my district. A few years ago, Hatfield Power Plant, a coal-fired power plant that had hundreds of millions of dollars was invested in it to take it from the dirtiest power plant in the country to the cleanest, was closed down. I watched 200 families lose their jobs. I watched their children be concerned about what daddy was going to do. To join Reggie and to put, you know, I read something from the DEP yesterday saying coal-fired power plants are going to close whether Reggie passes or not. I don't believe that. And here's what will happen when those remaining coal-fired power plants close. We talk about all the jobs that Reggie could create. Nobody's come to my district to tell thousands of coal miners that will lose their jobs what jobs they are supposed to be able to get in a rural part of this commonwealth, where they have no other opportunities, and they will move across the state line into West Virginia to mine coal there. No one talks about my tool and die shops, the small manufacturers that supply to those coal mines, R&M Manufacturing in Waynesburg, Lingus Manufacturing in Waynesburg. Those folks will go out of business. We are in the middle, or hopefully at the end, of a pandemic. Coal was deemed a life-sustaining industry. And I think anybody who has watched the news will see that our environment, and I do care about our environment, contrary to probably what some people believe, the air is cleaner since we've all stayed home. But guess what? Coal mines have continued to operate, and so has coal-fired power plants. So as you drive here in your cars, let's talk about carbon emissions. I want to do something about carbon emissions, but I can tell you, because I have lived it, the coal industry has cut their carbon emissions. We can do carbon capture. We can continue to have these jobs. There's going to be a solar plant built in Greene County, and I am elated about that. I have always said we need everything in our energy portfolio if we truly want to be independent of foreign oil and be able to produce our own energy in this country. What happens in my district has allowed everyone to turn their lights on for many, many years. I need action to show new jobs being created. That isn't happening in my district. No one has reached out to me and told me, we're going to bring a huge manufacturing plant down to the 50th district, Pam, so when we close all the coal mines, your people have somewhere to work. Yes, I care about this environment. I'm a mother and a grandmother, but there is also a social environment that I must care about, because I have seen my coal miners standing in the food lines, in the unemployment lines, many times over the years. So I am a proud yes on this bill, because I think we can protect the environment and do it in a better way than shutting down an entire industry. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
With the General Assembly pushing back against a Wolf executive order, both chambers may exchange legislation that would require legislative approval to enter Pennsylvania into any interstate accord, especially when a tax is involved. But Governor Wolf will likely veto any legislation that would limit his authority, and a two-thirds veto override would be necessary. We will continue to update these legislative actions as they occur. Thanks for letting us be a part of your Saturday morning, and we look forward to bringing you the Manufacturing Minute again in 2 weeks. For more information about the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, visit us at www.pamanufacturers.org and find us on Facebook and Twitter. Until next time, thanks for listening to the Manufacturing Minute here on the Shale Gas News.
Welcome to the Energy Update, presented by the Institute for Energy Research for the week of June 15th, 2020. I'm Alex Stevens, and I'm joined by IER's Deputy Director of Public Policy, Jordan McGillis. Jordan, what do we have going on this week at IER?
Hi, Alex. I've got three pieces I want to talk about today. We have one that pertains to American domestic politics, and then two pieces that are looks at other countries' energy policies as we emerge from the coronavirus economic crisis. The U.S. domestic policy piece is a look at Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden's official campaign plan for energy, which would, and I quote, ban new oil and gas permitting on public lands and waters. This is a proposal that has some cachet among environmentalists and mainstream Democrats as well, but it would be very, very costly despite that ban being limited to the public lands and waters. According to the National Ocean Industries Association, the proposal would cost almost 200,000 jobs, and it would deny the U.S. government, of course, of billions of dollars of revenue from the royalties that would emerge from oil and gas development on public lands and waters. According to this study, the average combined oil and natural gas production between 2022 and 2040 would decline from around 2.5 million barrels of oil equivalent per day to just 1.1 million barrels of oil equivalent per day, which is a more than 50% decline. That's rather drastic. And then the two international pieces that we can discuss are one focusing on Mexico and recent announcements made by Mexican President Andrés Manuel López Obrador, and a piece that talks about Germany and France. In Mexico, the president has initiated calls for reducing the investments in wind and solar and preventing them from connecting to the grid. AMLO, as he's popularly known, views wind and solar as, quote, visual pollution, and he doesn't view them as reliable sources, which is a rather reasonable position to take, as we well know. In Germany and France, what we've seen emerging out of this coronavirus crisis is increased investment and subsidization of electric vehicles. Germany has increased its incentives for EVs by 50% and has increased its taxes on sport utility vehicles with internal combustion engines as part of a larger 130 billion euro stimulus package. Germany's EV subsidy program is, like much of what the German government does, interesting in that it combines public and private efforts. There are demands as part of this program for the industry itself to provide subsidies to prospective EV buyers. And the result is that in Germany, someone can get essentially a 9,000 euro subsidy when the auto industry and the government payouts are combined. The French government is also incentivizing more EV purchases, and theirs will provide up to 12,000 euro in subsidy. And that's part of an $8 billion rescue plan that's been devised for France's auto industry.
Thank you, Jordan. Those articles and more work from IER staff can be found at our website, instituteforenergyresearch.org. Final thing I want to highlight for our listeners this week is this week's episode of the Plugged In podcast, where I sat down with Robert Bryce to discuss the release of his new documentary, Juice: How Electricity Explains the World. Here's a clip from that episode.
I don't want to go through all of the content of the documentary because I really want to encourage our listeners to go and watch the whole thing for themselves. But I do think there's, you know, a couple main themes that we can pull out from the film that maybe we can sort of outline and just discuss briefly here. You know, one of the first things that jumped out to me is that the film really highlights the disparities between people who have access to affordable and reliable energy and people who don't. And the film captures that, I think, just perfectly in sort of a phrase that comes up on the screen that is something along the lines of darkness kills human potential, electricity empowers it. How underappreciated is that idea, and how important is it to develop the public's understanding of this concept and what you guys go through in the film there?
Well, thanks, because that, I mean, you seized on that one moment, which I think is really the emotional heart of the film. We went to India in late 2016, and I interviewed a woman there named Rahena Jamadar. She was 44 years old when I spoke with her. She had her first child when she was 16 and had lived 30 of her 44 years without electricity. So she'd had electricity for about a third of her life. And as we talked, she told me one of her daughters was going to the university, and we talked about lighting and how critical that was for education. And I asked her, at one point, and I was my friend Joya Shree Roy was translating in Bengali, and I said to Rahena, if you had had electricity when you were growing up, would you have gone to the university as well? And she immediately replied, yes, I would have gone. And it wasn't bitter. It wasn't just some, gosh, poor me. Instead, it was just this, of course I would have gone. Like I'd asked her if the sun was going to come up in the east tomorrow morning. And it was a few days later when I was in Jaipur and I realized, well, that was it, right? Darkness kills human potential and electricity nourishes it. And this woman's potential had been stranded in the dark for her whole life, essentially, most of her life. And that is the key. And that we take electricity for granted here in the U.S. We only notice it when we don't have it, when there's a blackout, right? But for 3 billion people, and that was the other metric that I thought was key to really making the film understandable, there are 3 billion people, 3.3 billion people in the world today who live in places where electricity consumption is less than what was used by my old kitchen refrigerator. I mean, that's the key in terms of global inequality, women's rights, climate change, whatever you care about among those issues, electricity is central to all of them.
The Plugged In podcast can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Google Play, or at IER's website, instituteforenergyresearch.org. Thank you for listening. Until next week, I'm Alex Stevens.
Stay tuned for more of the Shale Gas News. Environmental protection affects you no matter what industry you serve. Oso Wash provides the only certified clean solution you should trust for your vehicles. Oso is the only certified oil and gas industry clean tank washing facility in Northeast PA that's available 7 days a week. If it could get dirty, Oso can clean it. They're about 6 miles north of Tunkhannock off of Route 29 on Aldovin Road. 570-996-WASH and find them on Facebook. They are Oso Wash.
Are you looking for work in the gas industry? Linde Corporation is always looking for good people. Apply at lindeco.com. Linde installs water lines, sewer lines, and gas lines. We're busy in the Marcellus region. Apply for your next career at lindeco.com.
It's always a good time for Greenlee's Barbecue.
For all your meat-eating needs.
Resist the understandable urge to drink their award-winning sauces straight from the bottle. Although if that's your thing, we won't judge. Greenlee's Bold and Spicy Pure Rebel Sauce, Ozark Hillbilly Sauce, and Sweet and Tangy Premium Finishing Sauce. Handcrafted and homemade. Yeah. You can order the sauces online and drool over the menu, too. Greenlee'sBBQ.com. Greenlee's Barbecue, Route 6, Tunkhannock. Look for the school bus next to Keystone Truck Caps. Greenlee's Barbecue.
Why choose Lackawanna College? Lackawanna College can give you the start you need. Spend 2 years earning your degree and go right to work earning a great salary. With 29 degree programs in competitive industries like culinary and hospitality management, petroleum and natural gas, and sonography, Lackawanna College can help you find your future. Visit lackawanna.edu for more information on how to apply or contact the admissions office at 570-961-7814. Why choose Lackawanna College? If you're looking to get ahead in your career or start a new one, Lackawanna College's Continuing Education Department offers a wide variety of certificate programs that are highly affordable and can help you get back to work quickly. Specialized training for workforce development and allied health careers is available, as well as the Lackawanna College Police Academy and the EMS Academy. Call 570-961-7813 for more information or visit lackawanna.edu. Find your future at Lackawanna College.
Cabot has been, you know, a fantastic corporate partner because they caught the vision. We have a goal to end hunger in Northeast Pennsylvania by 2025. Cabot's contribution is helping make that happen.
I live in Springville. I'm a landowner in Auburn Township. They've treated me with respect, my property with respect. They do an excellent job. Everything has been neat. There's never been anything out of place. Anything that they said they were going to do, they did. They came to you and told you what they were going to do. They gave you a timetable. They followed that timetable. Do not be afraid to invest with these people.
Industries like Cabot not only helped and lent their support to the Dietrich Theater, but they reached out and asked how they could help in other ways. Cabot has shown us that they want to invest in our community, that they're here to stay, and they want to support us for the long run.
For more information, go to wellsaidcabot.com.
Welcome back to the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender,
and Matt Henderson, and also me, DC Taylor. All right, here we've got your top five stories coming up. We'll have the job segment also coming up in just a few. Right now, each weekday, Marcellus Drilling News locates and shares news from the Marcellus and Utica Shale. Over 50,000 people read MDN each month, so we use it as a barometer to tell us which stories people find the most interesting. MDN editor Jim Willis compiles a list of the top stories each week. In honor of the summer solstice hitting the halfway point of 2020, this week we have a summary of the top five most read stories on MDN over the past 6 months. So coming in at number five, Antero Resources, layoffs and spending cuts ahead in 2020. This story from February 14th. Antero Resources, one of the biggest Marcellus Utica drillers with major operations in West Virginia, released its fourth quarter and full year 2019 update, along with hosting a conference call to discuss what investors can expect for 2020. There are loads of important details to share. Production was up 19% in 2019 over 2018. The company lost $482 million in the fourth quarter of 2019 compared to $122 million loss in the fourth quarter of 2018. However, $463 million of the loss was an impairment charge, a write-down of Antero's ownership interest in its midstream subsidiary, i.e. the paper law. It's a paper loss. Looking forward to 2020, the company plans to cut spending by 10% this year, spending $1.15 billion, and plans to make some layoffs. Antero plans to drill 95 to 100 wells and complete 120 to 130 wells this year. Rusty?
Well, you can open your doors to do business tomorrow after losing $482 million. That truly is incredible.
Yeah,
amazing. Number four, DC, TC Energy. Columbia finally gets FERC approval for the Buckeye Express. Now, in January of 2017, TransCanada's Columbia Pipeline subsidiary launched an open season for the Buckeye Express pipeline project. BXP will expand service along the Columbia Gas Transmission Pipeline from Ohio and Pennsylvania and West Virginia to send even more Marcellus Utica gas to the Gulf via an interconnection at Leach, Kentucky. Columbia launched a non-binding open season to gauge interest in the project, which will use looping and beefed-up compressor stations to increase capacity another 275 million cubic feet per day along the existing pipeline Columbia Pipeline system. The open season, time when shippers express interest in signed contracts, was a success. But these things take time. In March 2018, a year and 2 full months after the open season, Columbia filed an application with FERC seeking permission to build a project. BXP includes building 66 miles of new pipeline to replace old pipeline in Ohio's Vinton, Jackson, Gallia, and Lawrence counties, as well as pipeline replacement in West Virginia's Wayne County. Now, nearly 2 years later, the two Republican FERC commissioners, Chatterjee and McNamee, have voted to grant Columbia permission to proceed. Predictably, Democrat FERC Commissioner Richard Dick Glick voted against. He always votes against new pipeline projects. He's a partisan hack.
All right. Very good. The third most popular story over the past 6 months, the first 6 months of the year here, Texas Eastern Pipeline explodes in Kentucky again. This is a story from May 5th. It pains us to report this, but there has been another explosion of Enbridge's Texas Eastern Pipeline Company, TETCO Pipeline, in Kentucky. Last August, one of the TETCO lines exploded in Lincoln County, Kentucky, killing one and sending six to the hospital. See the TETCO pipeline explodes in Kentucky, killing one. Southbound Marcellus Utica gas stops, that story on MarcellusDrilling.com. Fortunately, this time the TETCO explosion happened in a rural location in Fleming County and didn't injure anyone. The Marcellus Utica gas flowing through TETCO in that area has been 1.33 billion cubic feet per day. It dropped to zero. The owner of TETCO posted a brief notice to say all three TETCO lines running between two compressor stations, Owingsville, Kentucky, and Wheelersburg, Ohio, would remain offline for at least 2 to 3 weeks. Even with all three lines shut down, NGI, Natural Gas Intelligence, reported much of the gas flowing through TETCO in that region was rerouted to other pipelines. And number two story for the past 6 months. Go ahead.
Got it. Number two, DC. Chesapeake Energy and Total beat a class action royalty lawsuit in Ohio. Now, in 2015, a group of Ohio landowners did what landowners had previously done in Pennsylvania, Texas, and elsewhere. they filed a proposed class action lawsuit against Chesapeake Energy, claiming Chesy had screwed them and about 1,000 other Ohio landowners out of a collective $30 million in royalty payments. It took nearly 5 years with a lot of twists and turns, but yesterday, United States District Court for the Northern District of Ohio ruled in favor of Chesapeake, dismissing the claims against them. The lawsuit was originally filed in Columbiana County Common Pleas Court by an Akron, Ohio woman and the owners of two Columbiana County farms. Now, in addition to Chesapeake, French company Total E&P USA, Pelican Energy LLC, and Jamestown Resources LLC were also named in the lawsuit. The plaintiffs claim they only allowed deduction from royalties, according to signed leases, is for taxes, not for drilling expenses, not for post-production costs, etc. The lawyers filing the lawsuit figure there are at least 1,000 landowners with 40,000 acres who have been negatively affected by Chesapeake's royalty shenanigans. The landowners claim Chesy should not have claimed certain post-production deductions before paying royalties. The court said the language in the original leases allows for it. Dee?
Okay, well, the number one most popular story for the first 6 months of 2020, ME2 pipeline worker charged with falsifying welding records. This is from March 20th. A worker hired to X-ray welds on sections of the Mariner East 2 pipeline in southwestern Pennsylvania has been charged with falsifying records, indicating that he performed the work when he didn't. That is a felony, according to one news account from according to one news account. The worker from Westmoreland County, Pennsylvania, is expected to plead guilty and faces up to 5 years in prison and a fine up to $250,000. The good news is that Energy Transfer, the builder, discovered the deception and immediately reported it. ET re-inspected all the welds supposedly inspected by this worker. On March 10th, the U.S. Attorney's Office filed an indictment with the U.S. District Court for the Western District of Pennsylvania, charging Joshua Springer of Scottsdale, Pennsylvania, with knowingly and willfully making a false document in connection with an interstate pipeline project. Springer was a level 2 radiographic technician whose responsibilities included testing pipeline welds via X-ray and certifying their quality and integrity. Springer worked on a section of pipeline stretching from Houston, PA in Washington County to Delmont, PA in Westmoreland County. Springer's job was to develop the film, interpret the test results, and sign reader sheets, which record the results and are required by PHMSA regulations. In August 2017, Springer allegedly made a reader sheet that stated that a pipeline weld had been X-rayed and the resulting exposures were acceptable. In fact, the weld had not been properly X-rayed, and the exposures were neither interpreted correctly nor acceptable. Just to reassure you, federal regulations call for 10% of all pipeline welds to be X-rayed. ET X-rays all of them 100% on every project. And those are the top five stories thousands of people read over the past 6 months on MDN. If you like to keep track of the headlines each day, it's easy. Just sign up for MDN's free daily email at marcellusdrilling.com/email. Now, here on the Shale Gas News, it is time for the jobs segment, brought to you by Lackawanna College, the School of Petroleum and Natural Gas. Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. Rusty.
DC Taylor, thank you. And starting in Pennsylvania, Leidos, looking for a geoscience researcher out of Pittsburgh. Shorty Services, looking for a gas construction inspector based in Fort Washington down in the Philadelphia area. Frontier Environmental Services, looking for a heavy equipment operator for their pipeline division based in Washington. Travis Turner Companies, a sandblaster and painter out of Montrose. Mountain Energy Services, a labor hydrovac crew member, that's for the day shift, out of Tunkhannock. Seneca Resources Company, looking for a production foreman out of Wellsboro. CUDD, C-U-D-D, CUDD Pressure Control Associates, an entry-level oil field opening, and CDL drivers are needed out of Muncie, Central Pennsylvania. Black Hills Energy, a natural gas engineer level 2 out of Pittsburgh, and Penn Hills Resources looking for well tenders based in Kane. Dominion Energy has an opening for a welder, that shielded metal arc and flux core stick out of Renovo. Moving to Ohio. Rocon Oil Field Services looking for a torque and test operator in Roustabouts, plural, out of St. Clairsville. Abrams Technical Services, a construction coordinator for their oil and gas unit out of Middletown. Southern Cross, a field technician for their gas leak survey unit out of Cincinnati. Central Ohio Technical College, an engineering technology professional for oil and gas, that's out of Newark. UGI looking for an operator level 2 out of New Middletown. The Energy Cooperative, a right-of-way worker out of Utica. And Diversified Gas and Oil, a senior IT measurement analyst based in Canton. Now in West Virginia, Southwestern Energy, a regulatory analyst out of Jane Lou. KS Energy Search Group looking for a production engineer based in Charleston. RDR Energy Resources, a pipe fitter foreman out of Clarksburg. West of Virginia University, a postdoctoral fellow, a Department of Petroleum and Natural Gas Engineering directional drill operator, course leader, and teacher out of Huntington. And MasTec looking for laborers and groundsmen based in Chesapeake. Got a handful in New York, Kleinfelder, the environmental and surveying folks looking for a resident project representative for the oil and gas division out of Fishkill. NYSEG, NYSEG, looking for an energy specialist based in Vestal. Area Energy, an opening for a renewable natural gas regional manager. That'll be headquartered in Waterloo. And National Fuel, a gas measurement analyst headquartered in Buffalo. One more, Con Ed, looking for a manager of electrical operations as well as gas based in New York City. And those are the jobs this week. Sponsored by Lackawanna College, the School of Petroleum Natural Gas, Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. And we thank you for listening to the Shale Gas News on our network of stations every week, GEM 104 and, of course, WEJS 1600 AM and 104.1 FM in Williamsport. And we'll see you next week. And once again, we thank you for listening to the Shale Gas News. For Bill DeRosier, Matt Henderson, D.C. Taylor, I'm Rusty Fender. Thank you for listening to the Shale Gas News.